Hello and welcome to Team White. We're doing a tricontinental report here today. Well, actually, maybe only two. North America and Africa. Two of the best continents out there, if you ask me. I'm here in Nemo, Northeast Missouri. Very exciting place. We've got Monica, and I'll let her decide if she wants to tell you where she's located. And she's going to tell us more about her German experience. And we've got Jan in South Africa, as always, and he's going to tell us, give us an update from there. And then I will give an update on the James Field matter that was settled within the past few days in a very disgusting way. But like I said, we're going to focus again on Monica Schaefer, sister of Alfred Schaefer, still in jail in Germany. And she's going to give us a few insights into a few more specifics we didn't get to last time. We're going to talk about the Green Party and ritual defamation and German women uglifying themselves, as you may have read they do in Sweden, in order to tamp down the sex attack or the sex appeal from these horrible brown invaders. But Monica, what would you have to say about the first of all, welcome. And what would you have to say about the Green Party over there?
Yeah, thank you for welcoming me back onto your show. And I am in Canada. I'm back home in Canada. So the Green Party, I was involved with them, quite involved for a number of years, even ran in elections and whatnot, because I thought at the time that their philosophy and principles really were in line with my principles. And this was back before I had my eyes opened to the reality of how the world is actually running. And, you know, we kind of live in a dual reality, the world as it is presented to us by the mainstream and by our education system, by the universities, everything around us, the TV, the Hollywood, you know, the scene that they just basically have indoctrinated us and are conducting psychological warfare against us with presenting us a world that is very Orwellian, where black is white, peace is war, slavery is liberty, just various opposite concepts. Pretty much everything we have been taught is wrong. So that's the world that I grew up in. But, you know, I always have cared deeply about nature and about things being right. Like if I see things that are just simply unfair or wrong, I just I object to that, and particularly, it's my love of nature and the natural world that got me interested in the Green Party. Yes, so once I started to learn about things like 9/11 first, and then learn that Israel was responsible, like that's kind of where the buck stops for some of these nasty things that are being done, like 9/11, that's when things got a little bit rocky for me with the Green Party. And I'm going to cut it a little bit short and really summarize this, because it was a sort of a long and complicated process. But I ended up resigning and terminating my own membership from the party myself. And then about a year later, when my video, Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust, came out, lo and behold, the leader of the Green Party of Canada, Elizabeth May, she opportunistically made a press release, and this was then in the mainstream media all over the country, how the Green Party of Canada was going to terminate the membership of this bad person, Monica Schaefer, at the earliest opportunity. And that was quite a surprise to me, because when I had resigned from the party and terminated my membership, I had written a big, long letter to Elizabeth May explaining exactly why and on principle that I was leaving the party. And she had answered me personally. I know that it was her, not just some assistant. She has the memory of an elephant. She knows that I had left the party, but somehow she thought this was a good idea to make this big public statement of it when I came out with that video. And maybe she was, you know, ingratiating herself to a certain powerful group of people and thereby currying favor with them. I don't know. So that was the end of my involvement with the Green Party. And, you know, what I've witnessed from the German Green Party, oh, my goodness, they are the worst in all of this. Like, in terms of, I've heard some Green members of their parliament saying publicly that, you know, the future German is not blonde and blue-eyed, the future German wears a veil, and the future German is brown. And she said, and that's good, and that's good. And, you know, unfortunately, we have the situation that the German people have been most, quote-unquote, re-educated, a la George Orwell, of all the people, it seems, and because they've been brought down to their knees by this collective guilt that they are supposed to have forever and ever more about this this non, well, it's a fairy tale story. It's just the whole story of the Holocaust, which is not true, and everything has really been backwards and reversed. And the whole idea of that is to hold it like a bludgeon over the German people's heads so that they never rise up again, or they can never think for themselves, because always it's this story that's brought back. So if they ever have a peep of protest against this invasion that's going on there, oh, but that's racist, that's xenophobic, and it's going to lead to a Holocaust, you know. So there's this collective guilt there, and it's a psychological warfare. It's the war never ended, really. Just the bombs stopped dropping, but the war did not end. And there is a war against the heart of Germany, and then by extension, there is a war against all the white people of the world, as we know and have seen. And I'll just pause for a moment, let you jump in.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You used the right quote, which is, what was that from? Sefton Delmer, some British intelligence guy. I'm assuming that's a valid quote. That's certainly true, whether or not he actually said it or exists or whatever. But there's been 100 years of atrocity propaganda directed against Germany. They admitted after World War One it was true, but they've never admitted the Holocaust was a lie, although elements of it, like the soap and lampshades, they eventually conceded, oh, yeah, we just made that up. And eventually they'll probably admit, when there's no more German people left or no more white people left, they'll probably admit that, yeah, we tricked them. We drove them out of existence with this lie about gas chambers, and they were all too willing to believe it. I would say partly due to their Christian faith opens the door to that kind of garbage. But, yeah, so Jews first try to destroy anyone who stands against them, who understands them and behaves against them. So that's Hitler and the Nazis. But then ultimately, you want to salt the ground so that nothing can ever grow there. Well, what's the equivalent among people? Destroy the race that produced people who actually got smart enough to understand and fight the Jews. And that means destroying, ultimately, the white race, because it has the brains, it has the ability to understand Jews for what they are, and the ability to fight them as well once they achieve that understanding. And that's certainly what we're here at Team White to spread. But this is an existential attack upon our people and upon our race, centered upon Germany as the heartland of Europe.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's an existential crisis. That is what this is about, and that's why we just absolutely have to come at this from all angles. And for me personally, I am doing my utmost to try to help people see and open their eyes. I was able to, and it's very recent for me. I can just tell you that it's pretty recent for me that I woke up. So I don't have a problem admitting that I was, well, kind of like a zombie until a few short years ago. And that's not an insult to anybody who is still asleep at the wheel. I mean, it's the result of this toxic drip feed of constant lies that we've been getting since we were born, basically. And the thing is, what made us so vulnerable to believing these lies is that we were always told, we have freedom of speech, we have freedom of the press, we live in the best country on earth, we have this fantastic democratic system, government of the people, by the people, for the people. So when you're told that, and we're also taught when we're children never to lie, and by nature we believe our parents, we believe adults, we believe authority, and that has served us well in terms of our survival in the past, because if children did not take from their parents, you know, what the parents say to be true, then they might just die, because they might just go off in a place where they get eaten by a lion or something, you know. I mean, these are all very natural instincts that then were used against us because the enemy is within our gates and the enemy has used psychological warfare against us. And one of the methods I wanted to talk about too, that if somebody steps out of line and breaks some taboo, like becomes a dissident in terms of, you know, going against a politically correct idea of what we're supposed to believe, then this practice of ritual defamation gets unleashed against that person. And the purpose of that is to destroy the person, destroy the reputation, the status, the character, or the person standing in a community. And it works best, of course, if that person was already in the public eye, you know, if they weren't not known at all and just somebody who goes home and after a 9-to-5 day at work every day and just turns on the telly and drinks beer or whatever, but if then it's not going to be as effective and they might just ignore you instead. But if you are already in the public eye, this visibility enhances your vulnerability to ritual defamation. Now, they'd never debate the subject. No. It's all about character assassination. And it's also to frighten other people away from the you know, doing the same thing you did, like maybe looking into the truth of the matter or speaking out about it, even if they do know the truth of the matter. So it's got multiple purposes. It's to isolate you. It's to try to destroy you, bring you down, you know, make you go back on what you've just done. Like a lot of people, when they're subjected to ritual defamation, will say, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to say that. And I was wrong, but that kind of thing. But no, if you have the confidence and to have truth on your side, and if then you can just stay with it and not buckle, right? I mean, yeah, so that's basically did happen. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, they even hit, but see, here's the thing. So they did that to the very, very best among us. It would be like Charles Lindbergh, and he actually dared to mention the Jews and the British as driving us into World War II. It's like they're the ones who want to get us into another horrible European war. Well, after that, they went off on him, and they and his wife, Anne Morrow Lindbergh, who was a famous writer in her own right, didn't like the hostile looks she was getting in the department stores on Fifth Avenue in New York City. So they will absolutely defame you, and they want to make people afraid to associate with you, and thereby prevent they don't want anyone with any kind of money, looks, professional certifications, or just general credibility to be telling the truth about them in public. And anyone who has any of those things and who dares to do it, they must bring down in order to keep riding herd on the 98% who aren't Jews. So it's absolutely essential. But they have what you're talking about, the Professor Elul in his propaganda, it's every single thing in society coordinated and pushing the same way, so that you don't even realize there is another opinion because you've only ever heard one. So you assume that everybody thinks that same way, and that's what they've managed to achieve. And the internet was the first breaking out of that. No matter what the law says about free speech, the internet was the first way where you could actually pretty easily functionally find other people with a genuinely different point of view. And the sites that expressed that soon had more traffic than other sites and became a real threat to the legacy media, which is now joining with the professional Jew groups to drive them offline. So in the end, what is left but violence is my question, but I won't go down that track right now. But you're certainly right. If you're someone who has any of those things I mentioned, you've any kind of money, any kind of professional standing, any kind of, balls, brains, beauty, whatever. If you have any kind of inherent credibility to average people, they don't want you criticizing them. You must be not only destroyed, you must be seen to be destroyed, or ideally, they force you into a groveling apology and destroy you, and you're seen to be destroyed in the eyes of the majority, and that intimidates them out of what should be the position that is truly in their own interest, that you and others and all of us have awakened to see that, Jesus, this society is a gigantic trick being played on us.
Yeah, that's...
And you're a woman. Politics isn't even for women. It's for men. But women can think well enough to understand this and break through this crust. I have even known others in the same vein as you who came to that. You can come to this through a million routes. You actually had an environmental background, but you came through 911. Mm-hmm. I knew another guy who came through anthropology. I knew a woman who came through environmental activity. And just, you know, if you use the logic, this is because people who are thinking think the same. They may feel different about the conclusions. They may have different preferences. But if they're thinking logically, they will go like, why are we – what makes these people think they can come up to our border and demand $50,000 to go home and try to extort us? If you pursue any one of these tracks to the logic, it leads back to Jews and their agenda, and their agenda is anti what's good for whites.
Yeah, you're right. So, you know, many, many roads lead to Rome was the old saying, but now you could say many roads lead to Tel Aviv because yeah, it's absolutely true. People have had their awakenings through different channels. And since my own awakening, I've heard so many stories from people, and some, you mentioned a few of these roads, you know, and other roads might be through the vaccination industry or, you know, medical problems. Just there are many different roads. And if people use the logic and they start to think critically and they get to the root of the matter, they do end up at the same place. And so I find that extremely interesting. And then they discover that, oh my goodness, we're being lied to about pretty much everything.
This is why if you read the 100-year-old essays of Hitler and Goebbels, they are more on point than the garbage you read from the conservatives today, because they're describing the same creature, the Jew, acting in the same way in slightly different circumstance. The way he was acting in Germany in the 1920s, the way he acts in America in almost the 2020s is the same way and is bent to produce, to lead to the same end. So
yes.
This is absolutely factual, what we're saying. It's not based on any kind of personal animosity or rancor or disturbed personality. Those are all Jew lies to explain away the curiously consistent logic of all of their critics.
Also, okay, so, it's also important to know that they themselves have told us these things. So it's not like we're guessing.
Yes.
You know, Jewish leaders, Jewish rabbis, they've told us all these things through the
They have absolutely admitted every single point that every quote-unquote anti-Semite has ever made. They have admitted many times over. Now, they don't put it on page one normally, but in their own publication, it's not like they even truly really try to hide it. They admit. They just are a nation that is absolutely hostile to every other, and they mean to destroy whites because whites present a threat to them.
And
they're going to defame whites by race, by their entire race, and then by their sub-race. And by every, not only the whole set, but every possible subset. So they have defamations for white women, you know, calling them Beckys or whatever. They have defamations for white men. They have defamations for different classes of whites, as well as the whole race. They think of new problems and defects in our race almost daily. They're coming up with white privilege, microaggressions, you know, all this stuff. Year by year, just as you said, it's a steady drip, but they also produce new defamations every single year. They new ways to attack us, and they feed these to the masses who are only too happy to turn on their own kind because it's safe.
Yeah.
You know, it's safe to go after James Field and hate him and celebrate his being, you know, locked up for 419 years.
Oh, my goodness.
But
yeah,
So you're a woman who's living your life, and then at some point you have reason to start thinking about things in a slightly different way. You come to an unusual conclusion, and you put it out there, and then they start going after you.
Yeah, and you know, you were mentioning that they really have to go after people if they've got some kind of, you know, maybe wealth, or they're famous for
whatever
this or that.
Whatever people respect, if you have any kind of status –
Yeah.
If you're a doctor, well, that's and, something. You have got
yeah, yeah, exactly.
So
I don't have, yeah, I don't have great wealth, and I'm not one of these high-standing professionals, but I live in a small town, 5,000 people approximately, and I was what they called community leader. Now, that's not in the sense of being elected in an elected position or anything like that, but several times over the years, I heard that term being used for me, like a community leader. Basically, what that means is I wore a number of hats, public hats. So I was known in this community on a number of different fronts, like, for example, the local musician as a violinist. So I wore that hat and I played all over town. And not only did I make a living as a violinist, but I also played voluntarily at, you know, the seniors' place and the schools, and I played at fundraisers.
Yeah. So the key here is not what you did, but that you have some kind of ability and credibility, and were seen as a respectable, accomplished person in the eyes of average people in your little your area.
Exactly. And then the other hats I was wearing, you know, I was on a number of boards, like Culture and Recreation Board. I was running politically, so, you know, Green Party, whether people voted Green Party or not, they kind of respected that okay, she's running an election.
So the Jews would see, okay, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm trying to get people to understand how the Jews operate. So the Jews would say, okay, well, this, you know, you're not a state senator or something, but this woman has a measure of credibility in this town. She's known, she's active. And if this woman is all these things and also telling the truth about Jews, that's dangerous to us.
Absolutely.
So what does she have to do? So they have to try to bring you down however possible.
I'm so dangerous that I ended up going to prison in Germany. I mean, really, they're so afraid of me that my 6-minute video landed me in prison when I went over for Christmas last year. I was only going for a visit, you know, and then they nabbed me when they snatched me out of the courtroom. I was in the public gallery at the time that they snatched me. I was there to watch the trial of Sylvia Stolz, another political dissident who was on trial for another speech crime, you see. So the irony, I mean, they couldn't have done more advertising than that for us, really. Like, how stupid can they get, really, to nab me right out of the courtroom when I'm watching another political dissident, and then they nab me, and it's just, I mean, they did a lot of shining the light on how crazy this all is, don't you think? I mean, that was really not that bright on their part.
Then why would they do it? From their point of view, they're causing harassment and trouble. They're interrupting your life. They're preventing your associations. They're lengthening you being away from all of your circle in Canada. And they know that your case isn't going to be reported on the news that the suckers see, which is, you know, Fox and the cable TV. I'm speculating here. Maybe that's how they look at it.
I
guess
agree
it
with
is.
Alex.
Yeah.
I agree with Alex in that they would look at it, that they want to show their power. Because you are going against the system. And eventually what happens is the system comes and it hits you. I can speak from personal experience on a smaller scale here, but that's what happens.
And I mean, there's only one or two, like James Damore at Google, he did a paper and they let him out. These aren't even racialists that maybe one person on Fox News will slightly mention, but I've never seen them do a story on speech suppression in Europe, in continental Europe. Whenever they do speech suppression in Canada or Europe, it's always showing Jews as a victim, like Ezra Levant or that other half-Jew one, Mark, he used to be a big name, Mark Stein or something. He'll even claim he's not Jew, but he has some Jew background. They'll say, oh, these are the victims of free speech, which is protecting the evil Muslims. They'll never talk about white victims of free speech. That's why we're talking about it here. This is the stuff that should be broadcast to the masses, but this is the price we pay for allowing an enemy alien to come in and control our communications. And people are, you're right, genetically, they're built to follow. They're the feminine view, if you were right, you'd be running things, is inherently respectful of authority and obedient to it. It doesn't matter what that authority is, because they can't really think all that much except functionally, because I guess there's no biological need for more than maybe 1 in 20 being an actual thinker. But whatever the power is, it sets a pattern, and most people are going to follow it.
Yeah, that thing about most people being followers, it serves well when you have a society that's not infiltrated by an enemy. Now, as soon as you've got a group of people who are infiltrated by an enemy that likes to turn itself into a chameleon, then you have a problem, and that's the problem that we do have. And, you know, the internet, it has certainly been a game changer, and that's why they're attacking so strongly now and censoring so much, and also privatizing the persecution of so-called speech crimes. And they've taken all these words like fake news and projecting it onto, you know, the alternative sites like this one, and calling this fake news, when really, where is the fake news in reality? It's this mainstream garbage that we're getting all the time. But, you know, just everything, they just turn it on its head. But while we still can, oh my goodness, we have to use this to our advantage, this great game changer, the internet. And I don't even in Germany, they go crazy with the censorship, but Alfred always says, you know, the young people, they know how to get around that, and other people know how to get around it. We just have to ask the young people, how do you get around this censorship? And they'll help you out. They seem to have they've grown up with it, so they can find their ways. But yeah, we have to use it while we can, and that's what we're doing. So, yeah.
And you know, Monica, we have to be assertive, and we need to push forward, because they, in their own, you know, the Jews are busy aggressively trying to use all kinds of new systems to try and shut us up. I mean, they've gone to Google to go and mess with the search engines. They've met with Microsoft, Twitter. So, you know, we mustn't just sit back and just leave it. We need to be aggressive, and we need to find as many ways to get our message out. And I just want to say that in the study of psychological warfare, in one of the books that I have about psychological warfare, they make the point that even if 90% of what you're getting is one lie, let's say it's one message that you're getting from the mass media, even if you counter that with just a 10% message against it, that in and of itself actually has an effect far greater than you would expect. So that is why the Jews, I think the Jews also, when they saw what was going on YouTube and Twitter, they weren't too worried for a couple of years. And then when they saw that this thing is leading to much bigger things and to Gab and these things, and especially YouTube, I think that they then got a shock, that they then realize that they need to suppress it even more, because even that soft little message that was coming out actually threatens the system. And I think also this is why, when it comes to Europe, remember, all the real reaction against Jews has come from Europe. It is the whites of Europe who 95% of the time have pushed against Jews, pushed them out. Nobody else has thrown Jews out like the whites of Europe. And that is what really scares them. And I think that is also why they would much rather be functioning in America, where the Americans haven't yet experienced what the Europeans have experienced over the last 2,000 years. And another point is that a lot of the things that you describe, when you are describing them using this method against you and that method against you, this is one of the problems of having had Jews live among white people for so very long. They know us so well, and they watch us, and they understand our methods. And our methods are just our way of behaving among ourselves, not suspecting that there's an enemy among ourselves. The way we would treat certain things, the way we'd handle crimes, the way we'd deal with people who are stupid or malicious or whatever. And leaving the Jew among us has only made the Jew so much cleverer and so much worse. And it's getting ever harder to get rid of him.
Yeah, I mean, when you get thrown out over 100 times, and they're crying the victim, and people neglect to ask what was it they were doing, why they got thrown out. It's not just because, you know, we're born with some gene that says, oh, I want to be anti-Semitic. No, I mean, they were creating havoc, and people would wake up to this, and then they would throw them out. So it's happened, excuse me, over and over again.
Yeah.
It's like if you go to the bar and you get tossed out, you might get away with the first night going home to your spouse and saying, gee, that awful bouncer kicked me out, and the second night a different bar, and yeah, that was a bad bouncer too. And after a few times, your spouse might just say, hey, what were you doing? What's your behavior in there? You must be misbehaving. You're not going to get thrown out of 100 bars for no reason. Obviously, you're misbehaving, you know? So it's,
yeah, quite right.
Simple little analogy.
See, the problem is now that if you follow the blockchain technology and the social credit in China, it's absolutely hair-raising, because this is my argument. My argument is that Christianity is a lot of the reason we won't defend ourselves. And my argument is that if the Jews had had this technology 2,000 years ago, they would have been doing the same things they're doing now. Well, now the reason they're able to do this and finally leverage it onto a global scale is they do have this technology. And all I make this specifically against the people who claim Christianity protected us from Jews, and it did not. It protected Jews from angry whites reacting to their usury and the rest of their attempted garbage that they were putting out in society. But anyway, now they're going to have this technology that allows for complete totalitarian social control, and they're basically already operating this in a fairly advanced form in China. And I can't wait till they move forward on that here, or at least
what technology
bring it more out
can you
in
just
open.
Can you explain what technology you're talking about?
Social credit. Blockchain is just the new technology that that Bitcoin is based on.
Yeah.
In theory, it will do for money what the internet does for us talking. It allows minds to, in theory, you can use blockchain to do banking and financial exchanges without banks. So without banks or government, there's no central control. They can't tax it. They don't know where the value is, which is absolutely horrifying to the left. But the same blockchain can be used for all kinds of different things. It could be used to instantly assemble like every bit of data about a person into one unfalsifiable record, that, you know, your job history or whatever. And they're already doing stuff like that in China, and they have social credit, so that if you have the wrong views, or you hook it up to a camera and you even give a bad look or an eye roll or in camera, they can record all that, feed that into the system, and come up with a rating for you, and even prevent you from buying plane tickets and train tickets, and potentially, it's kind of like, I guess, in the old Soviet Union, where, you know, if you didn't go to 2 communist lectures a week, you know, you lost half your food rations for that
goodness.
Week. They were, what I'm saying is now they have the technology for complete control, and if you don't act the way the government wants you to act, you're not going to eat or rent a car or be able to travel anywhere. And they're already a long way down that road in China.
Yeah, it's why they want us to go cashless, isn't it? It's why they want us to go cashless.
Then
they can turn you on or off.
Well, then they know that there's – well, notice this. I was making this point in one of my feeds the other day. Like, I read these Pulp Fiction noir novels from the 50s, and they would be – they'll mention like a $500 or $1,000 bill. Well, there aren't any of those around nowadays. We've had tremendous inflation. By reason, there ought to be a hell of a lot more $500 and $1,000 bills, but there aren't any of them, or at least not that I'm aware of. There's nothing higher than $100. Why? Because of inflation, prices are a lot higher, so it makes sense to have a lot more higher denomination bills, but they're nowhere to be found. Now, one reason is they're afraid of counterfeit, but another reason is they want to make cash increasingly difficult and useless and get rid of it because it affords them complete control. And then, yes, absolutely, they can go right in and just say, if you're not doing what we want, they already have this in family court type stuff. If you're not paying what some judge based on nothing says you're supposed to be paying, boom, go in and get your driver's license. Turn that off. Go in and put a lien in your house. Go into your bank account and attach that and steal whatever percentage they say is fair. So social credit is like an extension of this. And you know, they had, I remember reading just all the technologies can be linked into one massive database that essentially grades you and your performance according to how the government wants you to be acting. And if you fall below a certain level, you're going to be deplatformed out of your life, you know?
Yeah.
Because just say you can't rent, you can't rent a room. You know, you can't get water utility. You can't get internet. You can't do this.
Yeah, all these things that you're talking about, Alex, it makes it super important for people to try to make themselves a little bit less vulnerable by, first of all, I guess the best first thing is to try to grow as much of your own food as you can, or get to know your local farmers and re-localize your own economy, your own economical movements, shall we say. I mean, that's something that we need to be doing simultaneously to all the other, you know, what we're doing here, like trying to wake people up and you know.
Yeah,
so
well, I think that
continue to exist.
Absolutely. I think the thing where I've been backward and not should have been farther, and Jan's probably farther, is you get into the cryptocurrencies ourselves.
Yeah. Because
financial is the first way they go after Goyim is to try to bribe them. And so the first way they generally try to hurt people, if they become an all, they watch them for a while. They watch them. They see, okay, what kind of credibility? What is this person pushing? What do they actually believe? What kind of people are following him? And then if he gets to be a big enough, or she becomes a big enough problem, then cut them off. And the main way to cut people off is financially. Because most people are not rich. Most people are a couple paychecks away from the street. Hurting people financially takes money away. So crypto is kind of like the internet for money, where you can do the stuff outside of their control because they don't know about it. And of course they hate that. So who knows? Eventually you can very well believe, because that's one of the planks of Marx, is controlling all money flows and knowing where all money is at all times. You can very well believe they are not going to allow that to happen if they can avoid it. But right now you can do it. So Jan?
Yeah, Alex.
You know, you know about that, but
what I wanted to mention to you is that here in Africa, with all these blacks who've taken over these countries in southern Africa that used to be ruled by whites, these blacks were communists. And of the communists in southern Africa, the most determined communists were the ones in Zimbabwe, which used to be Rhodesia. Now, Alex, there's interesting stuff that happens when you implement this communist system, because you're talking now about it working through technology and through the internet. But in Zimbabwe, before the internet and all that, what they did was they used your standard Soviet Union type approach, which is to have lots and lots of spies. There are spies all over the show, and everybody is spying on everybody else. And every black was a spy, and there'd be political systems that would come and take care of everybody. So, you know, some black who's unhappy about something could go and report it to their spy system, and the next thing you know is a political commissar comes and he visits the white farmer and puts him in his place. But one of the things that I saw in Zimbabwe, where they put in probably the single most complete totalitarian state in Africa, is that eventually over time, at first the system works well, but eventually over a period of time, it takes about 20 to 30 years, over a period of time, this thing actually starts to break down. And eventually what starts happening is that Even the blacks eventually start to realize that, you know, we're in this system and it's supposed to work this way, but it's actually not this way. And one of the things you'll find eventually is that it breaks down everything. One of the strangest results that comes out of this, Alex, is that it breaks every aspect of society down completely. It breaks people down to the point where nobody trusts anybody else. And it's not just that the whites start distrusting whites and distrusting blacks. You get to the point where the blacks don't even trust other blacks. And you even get to the point where the people at the top of the system don't even trust their own best buddies. And one of the things that I've observed here is that when this Jewish communism, this Soviet Union type of system, comes into a country, eventually it breaks every single aspect of it. But then what happens is that the people only pay lip service to it. So nobody really does what they're supposed to do, but everyone pretends to. And these are actually good things because eventually it means that the state is weakened. In the case of the blacks, what I will tell you is that the blacks cannot break out of that system. No matter how many of them, about 80% of the blacks in that country are against that system, but they cannot break out of it. They cannot. The system has got them totally, totally knuckled under. But it was white people who were giving that system the hardest time. And I still think that whites, of all the races, if there's any race that'll ever be able to break out of a totalitarian system, it will be white people. They stand the best chance. But the blacks, totally entrapped. They can't get out.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you're describing sounds like what happened in Eastern Europe under the Jew communists there, certainly, if you read out the various works, you know, Captive Mind and some of the other ones describing how people were. And I think that's true. It's just now this technology is more advanced than ever. And, you know, I read some, the facial scanning technology. I mean, they had, what was it, like Chinese beer festival, and they caught two or three felons they were looking for from being able to scan the crowd and pull them out, just scanning their faces. I mean, think about that. Wow. And that's certainly going to be basically everywhere. So I'm not really sure. There are loads and loads, even of non-Jews who are perfectly willing, all the SJW, the social justice warriors, who are perfectly willing to use technology to inflict a totalitarianism on the rest of us who don't agree with them and find them ludicrous and destructive.
Well,
you know, these are the people running these big, even if Jews started them, they're the people who are running these and providing the technical expertise for all these big social media companies.
Well, there's just one thing you need to remember is that all of this high technology was originally invented by white people. And if there's anybody who can break out of it, it will be whites.
Well, I hope so. I mean, the technology is not completed, is what I've understood from watching YouTube videos of cryptocurrency and such. It's still, because they're trying to, it's not just the currency. That's probably the main political meaning, since, you know, control comes from money. And if Jews, it was the biggest achievement for them was setting up the Federal Reserve in the U.S. So this is something that would essentially, in theory, repeal that, because it would allow people to exchange money that no one knew about, the government didn't know about, and these banks had no hand in. You see, so this is a huge potential thing, but all the kinks in it are not ironed out, and it also allows a lot of other things. You can have essentially non-falsifiable transactions recorded where there's absolutely no doubt, and this would get rid of, in theory, graft in government and problems like that, because you would have an absolute ledger that couldn't be falsified. So you're not leaving any gaps for people to run tricks. So again, this is something that's bad for Jews, in the way the internet's bad for them, because it allows other people to communicate outside their, you know, top-down model that they're trying to impose on everybody in money and everything else. They don't allow competitors with U.S. money. That's how they're able to counterfeit and feed their people the trillions of dollars, and then suck that out of the earning power of the rest of us and keep us wage slaves, you know, who are there just to fight their wars. So this stuff is going to define the coming century. So, and it's not finalized by any means, but certainly to protect yourself, to become non-fragile. Yeah, grow your own food, develop local networks of people you trust, and get into the cryptocurrency. And I'm hypocritical and deficient there, because I have not done that myself, and I should have done it, because I've been studying it for a couple of years. But in the 2019, I will move further. But yeah, Monica, you had also mention, there was another thing you wanted to talk about that you had mentioned, I think, in the last show that we did about German women in prison uglifying themselves.
Well, actually, there's a couple things that I wanted to mention about the women. So I had some experiences with these two women on my wing, and I was asking them if they spoke English, just for some reason, I don't know why, but needed to maybe read them a quote in English or something, I don't know. And then they both said, oh yeah, like, I have a boyfriend, we only speak English, he doesn't speak German. And then the other one echoed the same thing, yeah, I speak English with my boyfriend too. And then I just kind of flippantly said, what's wrong with German boyfriends? And oh my goodness, did I ever get an earful from these women about German men their age, so a little bit younger generation than myself, and they were basically saying that they were Waschlappen. Now, Waschlappen is a German word for like a wash rag or a dish rag, and it's the way the people have been raised, and you know, the boys are raised to be just these soft little wimps. And this is the schooling they're becoming. They're also, I mean, everybody's getting gender confused by the school system. And this, I think, is child abuse. It's clear child abuse, what's going on with the so-called sex education, which I would call porno pushing and perversion pushing in the schools and every younger age. But the boys are really being raised to be pretty much scared of themselves. And the girls, who then turn into young women, they want strong men. So what do? They get hooked up with foreign men. And this is exactly what the enemy wants to have happen. Like, that is exactly their agenda. And I
saw
it.
They promote that through all of their advertising. They're
That's
always
right.
showing blacks being vigorous and dominant.
That's correct. That's right. That's the image they're showing. And the women's natural instincts kick in, and they don't want a wimp for a man. They want a strong man who they
right.
feel protected by the man. And they even use those words. I want my man to be able to protect me. You know, this is nonsense if guys are saying, oh no, we wouldn't want to step in to, you know, because the woman would feel insulted, like she can take care of herself. I mean, stuff like that, you hear men saying these things, and it's just awful. I mean, you know, we have natural instincts, which, of course, the enemy tries to suppress these instincts with all kinds of methods and means. But there I was in prison, and I had some very concrete examples of how it works. And these women were wanting strong men. Now, the other thing I had mentioned, that I was kind of shocked in a way, because there was maybe a higher proportion of this phenomenon, but women making themselves ugly with all kinds of ugly haircuts and very ugly piercings and tattoos. And I mean, I know that this is sort of becoming mainstream, but it was just, it was marked, like it was remarkable for me how many of the women in prison were uglifying themselves. And I was saddened by that. Like, what happened to just good beauty and our notions of beauty? They just seem to be so altered. And anyway, that, I think, is just the culture that is, you know, the advertising culture, the whole culture,
yeah.
What that is making the women make themselves unfeminine. That's what it is. Like, it's
yeah.
unfeminine. It's defeminizing the women and wimping the men out. So everybody's supposed to be kind of this non-gender, you know, we're all the same, we're all equal, we don't even have differences between the sexes. And actually, I'd rather, yeah, it's just all the words being used, everything, the whole advertising. So that's something that I was very aware of and conscious of in the prison.
You know, Monica, I absolutely hate the defeminizing of women. Women are so ugly when they try to be like men, when they have horrible haircuts and when they behave like men. I find it disgusting. But among the things that I've also noticed is that a lot of women, especially here in South Africa, I'm seeing more and more women having lots and lots of tattoos, and sometimes tattooing enormous parts of their legs and arms and stuff. And you know, some of that is even outright unhealthy. I know that when I donated blood, that they said that among the, in the questionnaire, they say, if you've had tattoos, then you mustn't donate blood, because tattoos can give you blood infections and things. So there are lots of bad things that women are doing that I think is cultural, and I think that all this culture is coming from the Jews and the mass media. And you know, like you say, making the men into wimps and turning the women into disgusting males.
Well, and it's not even that it's not even so much women trying to look like men, because men don't look like that either, not in their natural state. Like, it really was just this uglification of themselves, which I found very it just would turn anybody off. And you know, that was what made me think, okay, this is the uglification of our culture. It goes hand in hand with the uglification of our music and art. I've written an article about that, how this agenda to make to degenerate our music and culture. And, you know, I did some research on that, and that was a communist goal. It's right in the archives of the American government, you know, the Communist Party. This is in the 1960s, you know, they had this this goal that they spelled right out, that we will make the art ugly, we will make music ugly. I mean, it's just like in the protocols, they're following what's in the protocols of the Elders of Zion, and that is to degenerate the art, so that we also lose sense of who we are. We lose our culture, we lose the sense of beauty, because really, when you look back at what our ancestors built in so many aspects of life, like the architecture, the music, the art, oh my goodness, the beauty, the absolute beauty of the things that our ancestors built, it's just astounding. So that was all to be done away with. And it's reflected in how these women are treating their bodies.
Modernism, and I mean, they're just a complete overall attack on all aspects of society, on the educational system, the politics, the money, the arts, and the, and then it spreads out to the individual, and they tell them, oh, you're being liberated by going to work every day and not having a husband and kids, just having cats and what have you. Oh, you're showing how strong and independent you are by getting tattoos and paying a lot of money and enduring pain for this garbage that's ugly. And yeah, where I am, that's incredibly common. All this stuff, obesity. I mean, I'm surprised 1 in 3 is obese from what they just came out with that in the U.S., that 1 in 3 is morbidly obese. That's more than 10, 15 pounds overweight. Morbidly obese, huge numbers of them have tattoos. It's almost more common. It's probably about 50-50 on who has tattoos and doesn't around where I am. I would say it's got to be at least like 40% have tattoos. It's got to be. And, you know, just persuading them that these things are destructive are actually good things. You know, the number one of which is the diversity. Diversity is our greatest strength, you know, unmanning the men, as Monica's saying, and masculinizing or roughing up or butching up the women and just making everything disgusting and ugly, because that's how Jews are. That's what they like, you know?
And also it breaks us down, because it breaks down our morale.
Sure it does.
I think that, you know, because the women aren't beautiful, then which guys are going to want to marry a woman if she's ugly? And which women will want men if the men are useless? So
that's right. That's exactly it. It's an attack on the family. And the attack on the family has been going on for a long time. And, of course, that leads to a few different results. One is that we generally have less children if there's been this concerted attack on the family. But also the family is the basic structure at the micro level for a functioning society. And then it goes out from there. Then you have groups of family, and then, you know, it's this the basic structure that makes a healthy society is a healthy family. And that has been absolutely under attack from all fronts.
Little platoon, as Burke called it, and they've tried to just atomize it into individuals who are being liberated and doing these stupid self-destructive things and changing the legal basis on which the family was always seen as the man's property and he would dispose of it. If he got out of line, then other men would knock his head around until he got right. Well, now it's all turned over to the state and the courts, and they empower the women, and they basically fund these single mothers and let them go nuts, and it doesn't work. Because all the people who are in prison, something like, 80% of them, they're single mother homes. They grew up without a father, and so they don't know how to act. And whatever produces degeneracy, that's what the Jew does, and it empowers him. And he does, in his own country, in his own family, in his own area, he does the exact opposite.
Oh, yeah.
They don't allow blacks in their country. They don't allow black crime. They're not preaching this garbage. They go on segregated buses sexually, or if, for the minority of Arabs, they don't want them in the same place they are. They protect themselves. They know who they are. We don't. And they've systematically trained us to disregard. We don't even know who we are or where we're going. We're just confused idiots. They see us as cattle and dogs and insects compared to them.
That's right. That's what their holy books... Their holy books tell them that we are cattle or insects.
And why don't and this is they have gained ascendance over us, and we have to fight back.
Absolutely.
I mean, we have to.
Yeah. So I was very very interested in what you were saying there before we got online about Fields and.
All right. Why don't I just go ahead and give a wrap up of the stuff in the U.S. The two biggest things I've already stated: one in three Americans is morbidly obese. One of those morbidly obese Americans was the 4'11", 330-pound Heather Heyer, who was hit and killed in a car accident involving white nationalist James Fields. And he was put on trial in Charlottesville, and he was just convicted and sentenced of first-degree murder and I think 9 other charges. And this is before the feds throw dozens of hate crime charges at him. He was convicted and sentenced to like 419 years and fined almost $500,000. Now, I encourage people who to look into this. This was a young man from Ohio who is trying to return home, and he's trying to get out of Charlottesville, a city he's not familiar with. After the rally that was canceled, even though it had a legal permit that was backed up by a judge, the cops and the Virginia state leadership and the Charlottesville politicians essentially threw the alt-white to the communist wolves, hoping they would get destroyed, and there ended up being a bunch of fights, and the whites came out of it. The whites win the fights, but then they lose them in the courts, and there were a number of other battles. But in this particular case, this young man was trying to go home in his car, and he was trying to find the right way, and a couple of people, there's crowds marching in the street. His car was struck twice, and he panicked. His glasses apparently fell off his head. He ducked down when his car was hit, and then his car accelerated about 20 feet forward. It hit higher and hit some other people. Now, the media make it sound like he deliberately planned this out and revved up his engine and tried to run down a mob the way the Muslims do it when they do car attacks, but it wasn't like that at all. He was trying to get away and get out of there and go home. And so he was thrown in jail. President Trump and Attorney General Sessions declared him guilty of murder before the trial ever even happened. Lock him up and throw away the key, they said. And he got a public defender who was really terrible, named Lunsford, a woman who had actually been guilty of some pretty serious criminal activity herself as a lawyer. But apparently the first lawyer who was going to be assigned to him was a solid right-wing defender, public defender. And the judge refused to let him have this guy. And so effectively what happened is James Field was railroaded by the system, a true high-tech lynching of this kid who was guilty of nothing more than trying to get away from people who were attacking him. And he's now guilty of first-degree murder, and they're going to go after him on hate crimes charges. And this is what we've come to, where even defending yourself gets you years in jail. He's not the only one. The other people who were attacked by the black DeAndre Harris who hit some guy, some old guy with a mag light, and then the old guy's white friends jumped on him and beat him up. Well, they're all rotting in jail while he skated and got $160,000 or $200,000 on GoFundMe. So the white idiot public is funding people who are destroying it. This poor white kid, you know, just a working class kid making $10 an hour, whatever, tries to go home, gets attacked, and now he's convicted of first degree murder, and he will probably end up getting the death penalty.
Wow!
Oh my goodness.
And this is the state that we fall into in the United States, and I guess the truly. Now, what I was telling you earlier is probably the most relevant. This wasn't even a, now I don't have TV, so I don't watch, but this was a fairly big case, maybe not as big as Zimmerman and the Ferguson trial of Darren Wilson. That was the cop who was attacked by Michael Brown in the Hands Up, Don't Shoot, that was later revealed to be a lie. But in those two cases, justice ultimately did prevail, and even the Department of Justice admitted after the fact that Hands Up, Don't Shoot was a lie. He wasn't doing that. He wasn't shot. He was shot when he reached in and tried to grab the officer's gun, just as Officer Wilson said. So the facts and the rational juries prevailed in those cases. In this case, nope, this guy did not get any kind of a fair defense. He got a completely incompetent, and it increasingly looks like deliberately incompetent, because the facts are not difficult to see. I mean, the dude was attacked. He went forward a little bit. He hit Heyer and a couple other people. Now, it was incorrectly stated that he didn't hit her, but apparently he did hit her, but he was not trying to hit her. He was trying to get away from people who were attacking his car. And no media in the U.S. will report that. It's completely blacked out. You can only find occasional stuff on YouTube before it's yanked, and you can hear a few alt-right or white nationalists talking about it. But basically, we have a lockstep, uniform, communist, anti-white, Jew-owned, Jew-edited, written out of fear of Jews mass media that is completely in unison in lying, and the correct term is gaslighting. They are, as Monica's saying, they're deliberately turning black into white. They do that on every single possible thing where they can gain any political advantage. And by God, they think they're super clever and super cool and just lying, and no one's going to be able to defend themselves against any media juggernaut that they set up to defame you. And in this case, it's this kid can't get an honest representation. He can't get an honest judge. I mean, the media is against him. What are you going to do? He's a victim of it is quite literally a lynching. I mean, they're lynching the guy. He's not guilty. He's not guilty of a goddamn thing.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, this freaking blob, this blob woman who's as big as a whale, he's in the street. What is she doing in the street? There's no law you can run around in the middle of the goddamn street. And they make it sound like he revved up. He was going like 23 miles an hour. All right, so it's not like he was zooming down the street. He was, and these people are coming out and hitting his car. Doesn't matter. They won't report the facts. Just
but see, of course, he rammed his car.
He rammed his muscle car into these innocent, joyful. They all use the word joyful. They were joyfully walking around. Yeah, beating people, attacking them. This kid had also had urine thrown on him earlier in the day. He'd been threatened with a gun by someone who's an employed professor in the state of Virginia. So all these play into his mentality as he's in a foreign city trying to find his way, you know, presumably back to the freeway to get back to Ohio. And they're saying he's guilty of first-degree murder because freaking 22-year-old panicked when he got hit by these assholes. I mean, this is a fucking communist mob, communist media. Vile Jews have to be destroyed before they destroy us. That's all it is.
Alex, what's happening in your country makes me think of South Africa in the 80s and 90s, because that is exactly how it worked in South Africa when the whites were dealing with the blacks. The blacks would come, they'd start the trouble, the communists, liberals, and Jews would stoke them up, they'd start the trouble, they'd start violence, they'd strike, or they'd break something, or they'd kill somebody, or whatever. And then the moment the police come, or the whites try in some way to now reestablish law and order, sort out truth from the lie, the lying mass media goes to work. They completely misrepresent absolutely everything that happens. And we used to sit in South Africa and we'd watch what is written in London and America and the New York Times about us. And we couldn't understand, you know, why are they misrepresenting what is very obvious over here? But it's clear that in your country that they're able to take blacks and large numbers of whites, that's the shocking part, and they're able to pull off this kind of stunt. But it's a rerun of South Africa. This kind of stuff happened tens of thousands of times, Alex, on a huge scale.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. See, that's so Jan's speaking from the perspective of someone who's, you know, they're 20 down, where the demographics are worse and they're farther down the road in terms of this. But, yeah, the problem is that the media are completely, and the media, the whole system, including the education that produces this mass of retarded, fat, stupid communists who are love to attack people en masse because there's safety there. And they all think they're good. That's the Christianity playing into it. They're telling them that they're good people because they're fighting hate. And they're so dumbed down by public schools that they actually believe in stupid, simple terms like that when they're actually the evil ones. How are you going to reverse it? I mean, there's no open media left to us except a little tiny corner of the Internet. And absolutely. The minute, you know, we get any purchase there, then they're deplatforming you. They just, in fact, another thing that happened in the U.S., they knocked a bunch of people off of Patreon and other support mechanisms. Even people like Gavin McInnes, who were overtly anti-racialist. He was the Proud Boys guy. So another example of this, the Proud Boys, who are overtly not racialist, not Nazi. They're not a racial group at all. They're just Western chauvinists. Gavin McInnes is a sort of a New York journalist guy who shoved a dildo up his ass, but he was the head of the Proud Boys. Had some event in New York. They came out afterwards and they were attacked by the Antifa, and they defended themselves successfully and beat them up. And now they have gangster racketeering charges against them. So no matter who you are, if you're white, semi-normal, you defend yourself against any of this communist rabble. You get called Hitler in the media, and you get the book thrown at you. And now he got kicked off of Patreon. He got dissociated from The Blaze, one of the neo. Now, he himself, when the Daily Stormer was deplatformed and Google basically seized its name illegally, he supported that. So now he's having the same type of thing done to him. So all these idiots need to understand, from the point of view of the left, all whites are Hitler. That's why they want white genocide, because whites are the race that produced Hitler.
Well,
they
Alex,
did it once, do it again, not just whites.
A question for this, you. Is the alt-right actually talking properly about this Fields trial? Are they at least putting out the facts?
To the extent there's an alt-right left, I was following a guy, I don't know why he named himself White Boner. Seems kind of stupid on YouTube. But
yeah.
Anyway, he did... He's where I got most of my information. He's done like 9 podcasts on. I think he was following it very closely. They also had another guy, one of Spencer's former associates. Maybe he's still associated. Spencer's kind of pulled back a little, but a guy named Conte, who was a teacher at a Catholic high school, and he was fired when he was associated with Richard Spencer and their altright.com or whatever their site was. So Conte was actually in the trial and was reporting on it for Russia Insider, I believe. And now he and White Boner, whoever he is, who may be Evan McLaren, who is posting on my forum, I think, but I'm not 100% on that. But anyway, he did a real minute breakdown of all the field stuff. And that's where I'm getting the basic factual data, because Griffin at Occidental Dissent originally spread the idea that, and others, not just him, but he was the main one. I actually relied on him stupidly, that Heyer was not hit by Fields, where she was hit by his car. So that was incorrect. And unlike the left, we don't lie. But it was not. He was not trying to run people down at all. He was simply trying to – he panicked when he was attacked is what happened. And I encourage you, look up White Boner on YouTube. He's done 9 podcasts. Watch number 9, or pretty much any one of them is all you need, because it will show like it'll show some real video, and it'll show like a layout of how the whole thing happened. And it's systematically misrepresented in the media on every single point to make him look up like a monster. Basically, they're just slotting him in for the Muslim and saying this is a white terrorist. He planned to do this. He tried to take out as many as he could. It's all complete garbage. He's just a kid who panicked. Mm-hmm. And his car was attacked and tried to get away. But, you know, they don't care. They'll never correct it. They're just lie all day long. And I just don't see any solution except literally killing these people. I really don't. They're not. I feel I have the right to say that because I've been doing this type of stuff since basically the mid 80s. And I know these people up close and personal from being in newsrooms with them. It basically, there's Jews who are rational racists going after their own interests. And there's whites who are essentially a cult. And they are an extremely hostile, intolerant, hateful, hate-driven cult. And they fucking hate people who are not members of their cult, and they don't want them to exist in the slightest. And these two forces are aligned. Basically, it's kind of an Anglo-Protestant thing combined with the Jews, and they are going to absolutely smash to pieces any kind of resistance to them anywhere in the world. And I mean, they're not people you can reason with. They really are sanctimonious madmen. As a judge and contemporary of one of my semi-famous relative, when they were fighting this shit 150 years ago, said, they're sanctimonious madmen. Back then, it was these abolitionists who wanted the imminent liberation of the black because they knew how that would destroy all the whites that they hated, like just normal Southern people and normal white people in Illinois. And they do all this in the name of Christian morality. The whites, and then the Jews do it for racial reasons because they know it destroys whites. So they take the twisted part of our race that they produce through their media and their bribed government institutions, their owned lock, stock, and barrel government institutions, and through the preachers they buy and through the doctrines they set up with their Christianity, and they teach whites this insane cultic universalism that rejects all facts in favor of its insane, impossible utopianism. And well, believe me, these people are not open to argument. They will not tolerate anything where they can smash it.
Well,
and they think they're clean. Yeah. They delight in lying about this stuff. Yeah.
Alex, this is a lot like the Second Anglo-Boer War. In the Second Anglo-Boer War, when the British Empire invaded South Africa to seize the gold and the diamonds, but they used all kinds of bogus reasons to do it. Now, in that time, there was a term that the British had called jingoism. And my understanding is that jingoism was a type of almost extreme liberal patriotism. And so here were all these whites coming from all parts of the British Empire, especially England itself, and they were coming to shoot Boers, and they believed that they were doing a great and good thing. And effectively, it's the same thing as what happened to the Germans, you know? Hate the Nazis. Let's go kill the Nazis.
This is the thing, I believe. It's hard to see this from the inside of the Anglo-American culture, but this is, I believe, a British thing, is moralizing. Everything they do is a great crusade, and they are always on the side of the good. And that's what you see in the forces doing battle in America leading to the Civil War, right? The people funding John Brown to go down there and kill people were a bunch of rich Northerners. And the people with this morality they're preaching, they're all the high IQ, very smart, very hardworking, Beechers and Stowes and these Anglos and in the Northeast – who are promoting this morality. And this has spread, and now that the Jews have come in, this is allied to Jews' foreign policy goals, and the Jews got themselves written up an annotated Bible that justifies everything they do, the Scofield Bible. And this, and the Anglo idea of them being essentially dog master, obedience trainer to the world, everything they do is always motivated by morality. They are always the good people, and anyone they oppose is evil. And they can't seem to see it any other way. And they're actually, on one level, they're beneath. I don't believe Germany is like that. And Germans don't understand that other people are not Germans who don't speak German, but still think like them. No, they're different. They don't think the way they think in Germany, in the U.S., and in the U.K. They don't think like that. They're always moralizing about, look at Theresa May, look at George Bush, who just died here. Always they're moralizing about stuff. The Germans, I don't believe, do that. It's a cultural thing. The French don't do it either, I don't think. It really is like an Anglo thing, and it unfortunately won the Civil War, and it's just metastasized from there through the war to end wars, World War I. I mean, what a stupid thing to say. There's your classic WASP, right? Woodrow Wilson. and setting up the League of Nations and creating the income tax and the Federal Reserve System. We're going to spread this all over the world, right? And they and this is the story of the 20th century and spreading democracy and women's rights and universal rights. And it's just, it's gotten metastasized is the only word for it. It's metastasized. And thank God now we have Russia kind of standing up to it. But that's almost our last hope. That and these cryptocurrencies and these other crypto technologies are about our only hope to evade it.
But Alex,
because it utterly triumphed in the U.S. and has now basically utterly destroyed it.
But Alex, you know? the kind of stuff that you're talking about, I mean, this trial is hideous in what has now happened and so forth. But just my general perception from my chats with you and just observing the information that comes out of America, I've had no doubt in my mind, Alex, that the way that this thing is going to go is this is going to go towards warfare. Your country is being destabilized. And if you look at what happened to the whites in Africa, you know, before the war really got off the ground in South Africa, the blacks were being pushed against the whites for about 20 or 30 years. And if you go and you look at what is now Zimbabwe, which was Rhodesia, that prior to that war taking off, there was about 20 years of also the same kind of pushing the two groups together, creating stress, and then carrying on. And they just carry on with this. And in your country, it will probably become like a kind of a racial, a race war / liberal war, where the blacks and the liberals crush all the other normal whites.
They use what they have, but they always pursue the same tactics. So in the U.S., okay, in 1960, it's 90% white, right? There is no racial problem. There's 10% slaves.
They
create a racial problem by changing all the laws. And foremost, they changed the immigration law in 65. Mm-hmm. They start bringing in the third world. And now all of a sudden, it's 60% white and 40% non-white. They also change what's taught in the schools. They start teaching anti-whiteness and anti-Americanism. And now you have, just like this kid the other day at Columbia University, a very heavily Jewed university, this scrawny little physics guy with a German name like Von Abel or something was drunk, and he was talking to a group of coloreds after midnight and just saying, I love whites. It's wonderful to be white. Whites created everything in the world, all the science and everything that exists. Whites created it. And this has become a big incident. And so the blacks are responding. They're taping him and laughing at him, and they're trying to get him fired and all that. But they're like, oh, no, everything was created by slavery. So that's one example of the ideology that all these coloreds have been taught, that whites are responsible for nothing good in the world and everything bad in the world. And it doesn't matter whether that's true. It matters that they believe it, and it continues to be taught. Yes. And it does. And they're carefully, as they would say, nourishing or nurturing an environment in which it's safe to attack whites. Yes. And that's what allows these Antifa to go out in the streets and attack the car of someone driving by. They feel emboldened, or to be a professor at a University of Virginia college and threat James Fields with a gun, brandish a gun at him, as he did before he was in the car, before all this happened. So they embolden the very worst. They not only embolden, they create and they embolden the very worst. I call them malocclusive. Their teeth don't fit. Elements of the white race, bring them together and turn them into a weapon to be used against us. They use us, they use elements of our, they set class against class, yes, race against race, nation against nation, but they also create groups. They create identities like homosexual or transsexual, and they use these to attack our race. So we're being attacked on every front by every possible means. Everything that their mind can create is used to attack us. And the policy, affirmative action, not long after they open the borders, all of a sudden they elevate blacks over whites legally and force them into white areas via housing, jobs discrimination. And whites are supposed to put up with all of this and love it. And diversity is our greatest strength. It just never ends. They got to be fucking destroyed. There's no other way around it. Kicking them out is not good enough. They'll just recreate. They don't. There's no evidence of them ever acting any differently. And now they have the ultimate technical tools to carry out the final genocide.
Alex, the answer is going to be revolution and war. But the way that it goes is that it takes time for the anger to build. And that's where the right wing is. And as time goes by and people see more and more of these things, people, the whites, will also become more extremist. They themselves will become more violent. But if you play your cards right, there are also people inside the system who are themselves going to be red-pilled, and they are also mm-hmm. going to come out and join us too. It's going to be ugly, and it's chaotic and confusing, and people are going to be, you're going to be spitting blood. You're going to be so angry. That is how it works, Alex. It was like this all across Southern Africa for decades, nonstop. It wouldn't stop. And eventually people kill each other. They fucking kill each other over lies. That's how it happens, Alex.
Yeah, well, we just have a low-level war right now where the blacks are, and Mexicans and illegals are constantly attacking whites, and it's never put together and contextualized for whites to say, hey, all of this is utterly unnecessary. You have it because Jews are ruining your country and not allowing you to see what's going on. So all these dots are kept disconnected. They're yes. kept just tiny little they don't report anything or link it up nationally. That's why I'm so big and I yell at you and scream at you about put this stuff in context so people can see the whole damn picture. You know, and see, Jews are trying these same techniques all over the world. They have to be destroyed. They're not going to Jews wouldn't kick whites out 109 times. They would genocide them once. See? Yeah. There's your soundbite right there. But it helps to think in those terms, to sum things up into slogans and make them graphic by memes is the great advance of the last few years. But they, you know, the fields, that's definitely another milestone marker along the way of significant change. Like, you know, the truth wasn't even really put out there at all. The facts weren't mm-hmm. really put out that, you know, she acted like his own. Okay, here's the most telling thing. His own defense attorney says that he believed he was being attacked, but it's not a matter of his belief. The one behind him, I couldn't tell if it was a girl, a woman, or a man, but took a swing in his car and hit it, and then a guy on the side hit it with a bat. So it has nothing to do with his belief. He was attacked by them, and his own defense attorney is acting like a journalist. Journalists always will say, like, Monica Schaefer believed she was held in a German jail. They're not quite that absurd, but they're within 1 inch of being that absurd. So,
oh,
Monica,
yeah.
why do you believe you were jailed in Germany?
Yeah,
what led you
exactly.
to that belief?
Yeah, that's how absurd it is with how they report. And, you know, I mean, just
nearly there. It's 99% of the way there to that. If you think I'm joking, it's not.
No, I'm laughing because it is so absurd, and you're absolutely right with how they report things. It they really do report things completely absurdly. And just to tie back to what you said about, you know, they want to get rid of us. I mean, who was it? Rabbi Reichhorn, I think, in 1859 talked about the wars being the Jews' harvest. Now, this is a rabbi. This is Jewish man who said that wars are the Jews' harvest, and, you know, a million have already died, and they get the other people fighting against each other to make more room for them. And then you fast forward to the present day, you've got somebody like Noel Ignatieff, Harvard professor, basically spelling it out very clearly that the getting rid of the white race is so desirable, he just cannot imagine that anybody would object to that idea. I mean,
yeah.
They do pretty much spell it out. And this white guilt thing, that kind of brings it full circle back to the reason I went to jail for my video in which I broke this taboo where you're not supposed to doubt or question the Holocaustianity thing. And it's to have this collective guilt bring Germany down to their knees, and now the whole white race by extension, because the other whites didn't do enough to stop that, you know, the gas chambers and whatnot, this fiction, fairy tale, fable that they have in their religion called Holocaustianity. And so the whole white race has this collective guilt, and not just for the Holocaust, but for so many other things that they've told us that we've done everything evil on the face of this earth. And then at the same time, they have elevated the black population, like in the United States especially, but basically here as well, but, you know, putting them in positions of prominence. And they said they would do that. I think there's a guy named Israel Cohen in the 1930s or something who talked about bringing, you know, their...
That quote might be spurious, but I know the quote you mean, and it's true. If it's fiction, it's still yet true. That's exactly what they're doing. I mean, Karl Marx said that in a letter to one of his boys back in the 1800s. They're gonna dominate by bringing about the end of races. You know, they know exactly. A lot of the problem is whites can't understand that Jews are not whites. Whites tend to conceive. They think, well, they can't imagine someone thinking in a different way or at a different level than they do. So they can't believe like stuff is super planned out because they can't plan anything out to any great extent. So they have trouble believing that someone could, I mean, I could prove it to them, but but they just can't conceive of someone operating on the scale and profundity and length of time over which Jews operate. But that's why I've been saying, at least for the last year after doing all these audiobooks and stuff on Mary Fagan and Leo Frank, the Jew who killed her, that you can easily demonstrate, because this happened in 1913, you can easily demonstrate an entire century of Jews putting lie upon lie and building up a whole structure of lies over 100 years in defense of a pedophile murderer. I mean, and it honestly should scare people when they see, like, these people are really genuinely a monster. They are operating as one organism. They all lie. They all tell the same lies, and they're easily discounted when you actually look into it. But they absolutely, like, their default is lying about stuff because it works for them. And you cannot get that across to most white people. They just don't accept or understand it because it's so different from the white mentality. You know, and that's kind of what Hitler was going into when he said the mass of people will fall victim to a small lie because they tell small lies themselves, but they can't even begin to conceive of the level of lying that Jews do. And it's cross-generational. It's cross-discipline. You have Jews in serious fields like academia or journalism or whatever, and they're all repeating and using and building upon each other's lies to defend a 26-year-old Jew who raped and tortured and murdered this little white girl who was 13, and he was cheating on his wife as well. And they defend that over a century. This is an international, intergenerational, genetic criminal clan, if we were to put it in white terms, and they're bent upon wiping our kind out of existence. It's absolutely the most amazing thing in the world.
It is.
Very real.
Jews are treated far better than they deserve. I've come to the conclusion that not just white people, but probably every race of people that Jews have ever come into contact with have treated them better than they deserve. But whites especially. Whites bend over backwards for them. I don't know if you saw, I put out a story earlier this week where the Jews have said they want words inserted into the Bible and the Quran which give people warnings that this is anti-Semitic. So Jews want the Bible and the Quran changed because it'll suit them.
There's unbelievable. It's just
unbelievable,
shocking.
There are people who get away with everything. They get everything they want. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Well, did we have more to talk about today? Or I hit the one thing I wanted to wrap up from the U.S. was the James Fields thing. That's certainly the big news here from the white point of view. Monica has given us excellent and continued insight into Germany and the conditions there. Jan, did you have anything else you wanted to say about South Africa? You've given us some good parallels from a nation and a different demographic circumstances and farther down the road, but yet experiencing the same kind of Jewish treatment, given the material they had to work with. What, anything else on the land expropriation front, or how would you sum up the week that was in South Africa?
Okay, Alex.
From the racial point of view.
Okay, I'll give you a bit of news from Africa quickly. The the big thing in South Africa is, of course, this land expropriation thing. I've been doing some digging into what people are, what information is coming out, and it looks like the white farming organizations have been doing some serious digging, and they've now issued some reports. AfriForum has issued a report, and they say that the government's game is to seize farms which have got a lot of coal deposits underneath them, and they're going to bring in the Chinese. The Chinese are going to get these farms, they're going to bring in these businesses, and the Chinese are going to build power stations. Somebody else has also sent me something that I haven't looked at yet, but it was about the Chinese army coming here, but I haven't gone and dug into it properly. But the big thing is, and the other thing that the government has done, Alex, the government and the mass media, and I'm convinced that the Jews are completely working in cahoots with Ramaphosa, the president, because the chief rabbi of South Africa, he's been very, very friendly to Ramaphosa. He's even been visiting him in his office as the president. And Ramaphosa himself has even addressed, there's a whole video where he gives a speech to the Jews in a major synagogue in Cape Town, and he talks to the Jews and he says lots of nice things. The chief rabbi introduces him, and this Ramaphosa, I believe that he's completely working in cahoots with the Jews. And you can see it in the mass media, but you've got to be real careful. At first, they were putting out stories where they were saying, well, you know, the process of making it legal to get the land, this process is a long process, and it's going to take government a long time, and they won't be able to make it law by the time we have an election next year. And the election will be in May, and we won't be able to have that as in the law. But then I was starting to wonder whether this is not just nonsense that they're putting out in order to catch the whites off guard. And shortly thereafterwards, Alex, it happened just like that. The government actually rammed the thing through. It's been rammed through, and they're going to start seizing land in March. And there's no question about it that the whole focus of this is to get the ruling party to use land reform, bogus land reform. And by the way, it's not like it's the first time that they've taken land. They've been taking land from whites since 1996. They already set up a land court in 1996. They already seized 4,000 farms. The government physically took more than 4,000 farms from white farmers, but the only thing was that they had to pay them market-related prices. But the new law is going to be to seize those farms without paying for them. But Alex, those farms that they're taking, like in the case of the one farm, the one farm the government is only willing to pay 20 million rand for, which is, let me just quickly calculate that just so that you can get it in dollars. Just pardon me, 20 million. You are probably looking at about $1.4 million, I'd say. So, Alex, this farm, the government will only offer the farmer about 20 million rand for it. But the coal deposits underneath the farm are worth 10 times that amount. And they've had companies there. People have looked at it. That is the kind of wealth that's there. And I'll tell you another thing that these black communists did. In the 1990s, this same government passed a law saying that everything below 6 feet, anything deeper than 6 feet in the ground, belongs to the government. So the government basically owns all minerals in the country, but they've just never gone and actually seized it. now they're going to start seizing it. So they're going to start seizing particular farms. And the farming organizations are saying that all of these, a lot of these farms are in the north, and this is where the coal deposits are. And so that is the basic thing. Now the blacks are claiming that the Chinese are going to come in and they're going to develop it and so forth. The danger here, of course, is that they're bringing China into this thing, and that is very bad news. And just generally speaking, all this talk of seizing farms and so forth has caused quite a collapse in the property market. I was reading that house prices in South Africa have dropped 21%, and farm prices have dropped 32%. So that's a quick wrap-up. And I suspect, Alex, I'll tell you what I think the secret is. I think in South Africa we've got like breakaway blacks who are more. I'll tell you what an even bigger danger is. Is that we've got blacks here who are like the most extremist blacks, guys like Julius Malema. Now, Malema used to be in the ANC, which is the ruling party, and Malema broke away and he created a thing called the Economic Freedom Fighters, which is just another name for an absolutely communist party. Now, the EFF has been gaining black support over recent years. And I'll tell you what I think the big danger is that with Ramaphosa coming in, and Ramaphosa is very popular, make no mistake. Ramaphosa is probably just a little bit less popular than Nelson Mandela was. Now, if Ramaphosa pushes this stuff, and he pushes this hard, he can actually destroy the EFF. The EFF then basically loses its only platform, because its platform was to steal the land from the whites. But if the ANC goes in and they make it their move, and they go and they physically seize farms before the election, then they could destroy the EFF. And here's the nasty part. I've noticed in the liberal mass media that they have been saying, oh, next year is going to be a terrible year for the ANC. The ANC, for the first time ever, is going to get less than 50% of the vote. Here's my prediction, Alex, that if these guys do it this way, that you're going to find that the ANC is going to come out with the biggest majority it's ever had. And the big number is 67%. If they get two-thirds of the seats in Parliament, they can then change the Constitution at will in any way they want. And no combination of political parties will be able to stop them. And that, my friend, is what I think could be our nightmare. And I'll tell you just one other thing. When I wrote my book, Government by Deception, back in 2001, I went to all the old military guys. I found military officers, especially in intelligence. And I went and I spoke to them and I interviewed them and I hid their names. But one of the guys I managed to get a chance to talk to was a guy called General Tini Groenewald. General Groenewald was in charge of the military intelligence section of the South African Army for 20 years. And I met General Groenewald in his house, and I told him that I was writing a book and I needed this information. And he answered all my questions, gave me lots of other information. And then General Groenewald said the following to me. He said to me, there's one black guy you must be very careful of. His name is Cyril Ramaphosa. And he said to me, if Cyril Ramaphosa ever becomes the president of South Africa, the whites will be finished. And those were the exact words of General Tini Groenewald. And as military intelligence, spying on the enemy, he would know things like that. And
now, what year did he say that to you?
In 2001, Alex. 2001. Okay. And it's written in my book. It's in my book. It's been sitting there for the last 17 years. And he said to me that if this black... He said to me that Ramaphosa is a true communist, Now, you'll find that the liberals and the Jews, they will tell you, no, he went into business. They dragged him into business, and they turned him into a billionaire. But now he's back. But Groenewald told me that this guy is the worst communist of the lot. And his exact words were, if he becomes the president, the whites are finished. So this is the beginning of our real unraveling.
Okay, excellent. That's a great first-hand report, terrible as it is. So basically things are horrible on all three continents from the standpoint of view of white people is what I'm taking from this.
Horrible and getting worse. But you know, Alex, I've lived in these countries. I've seen all kinds of chaos, and I still say white people can do it. White people actually need hardship. They need lots of enemies, and then you'll see what white people can do. Whites are capable of a lot. I've not lost faith in our race yet, and I'm willing to risk my life.
Going in and out on my end.
So yeah.
Right.
So yeah. Are you there, Alex?
Still here. I would say that yes, we need to regain our spirit, and it does seem that way that when things have been rolling along very easy for a long time, we get kind of soft and, you know, fat and happy.
Well, just hang in there. I've lived through some pretty scary times, and I still believe that this is what we need. We actually need things to just become totally chaotic for us. That is when whites are going to wake up. And
up and regain our strength and spirit, and that we must.
We must fight for our existence. I'm completely a believer in that. Trust me, I have no intention of dying. No intention whatsoever. And I think Alex and I have said it before, if we're going to die, we're going to make sure that the enemy pays a very heavy price for it. And rest assured, that is my exact intention. So, Alex, I believe you're back.
Okay. Yeah, my mic went out or something, some technical problem there just for a second. Now it's back. Anyway, all right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up for today, unless either of you has something more to add. We've probably gone on long enough. I think it's been very enlightening, though. But we want to thank you for joining us here, you listening. We're doing it to reach out to white people and to truly understand what's going on in the world. And I think it's great to have report from all three continents, at least, out of the six or seven, or I don't know how many they count today. But anyway, we'll be back with you again with more real soon.